Today, one out of every four Christian adults believes Jesus Christ could return in their lifetime. Why? Because Jesus promised, "I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." Where does the Bible teach that a whole generation of believers around the world will be taken en masse into God's presence at the time of the rapture, and that they will never know what it is to die physically? Today, we will take you step by step through what the Bible reveals will happen at the moment of the rapture, and how this mighty act of power will lead the world into the future events the Bible predicts will happen in the last days. My guests are Dr. Ronald Showers, widely recognized as one of the most distinguished theologians in America, and author of numerous books, including What on Earth is God Doing? And The Most High God. My second guest is international journalist and prophecy scholar, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, who has lived and worked in the Middle East for over 20 years. He will report on how events today are rapidly leading toward the Alliance of Nations the ancient Jewish prophets predict will come against Israel in the last days. We invite you to join us for this special edition of the John Ankerberg Show. Welcome to our program. We're talking about the rapture today. We're talking about the tribulation. We're talking about the second coming. And I've got two wonderful guests, as you've already heard, Dr. Ronald Showers and Dr. Jimmy DeYoung. And Dr. Showers, I want to come to you first, all right? A lot of people have heard about Christ's second coming to earth, but not all of them realize that the Bible teaches that when Christ comes, he first intends to rapture or snatch away Christians from the earth. This will be followed by the tribulation, and then Christ is coming back to earth to judge, rule, and reign. Now, people want to know, how do we know these things? And a lot of prophecy conversations that are on television, people never quote the verses. What I've got you guys here to do today is to present what God says in the Word. It'll speak for itself. And in terms of the rapture, defining what it is, there are three, four major passages. We're going to take them in order, okay? But we're going to start with just 1 Corinthians 15, 51, 52. And folks, I'm going to put this up on the screen, so here it is. The Apostle Paul tells us in this passage, "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." All right, Rennie, what are the four things in this verse that the Apostle Paul is teaching us? He first of all starts off with, "I'm going to show you a mystery." What is a mystery in the Greek language?
It's referring to something that has never been told before to mankind. It's a whole new revelation from God, first to the Apostle Paul, and he passes it on to the believers to whom he's addressing this. And what he's saying is, it's something new. Now, it wasn't about resurrection from the dead, because even the Old Testament indicated that people would be resurrected from the dead. Daniel chapter 12 indicates that. Abraham believed when God told him to sacrifice his son Isaac that God would resurrect him from the dead as well. And so that was not what was dealing with here at all. But what it's saying is that the new thing that's being revealed here is the fact that not all Christians will die. There's going to be a time when Christians who are alive on the earth, they will escape death altogether, because it's going to be an event that the Bible calls the rapture of the church. And it mentions that that not all people, not all Christians are going to experience death, but all Christians will be changed. They'll be transformed from a mortal human body which can die, etc., to one which will never die again.
Yeah, I love his words. We shall not all sleep. And I always tell people, look, if we got a chance of getting cancer or dying of some disease and then going to heaven, or Jesus comes and we're out of here, which one would you choose? And they all say, I'd like the out of here one. Yeah. And he says, you know, we're not all going to just be asleep. We're not all going to die. There's going to be some that are going to be changed and taken right off of the earth. And what does it mean when he says we'll be changed? What does that entail?
The implication is that those who have already died, their bodies will be resurrected from the dead with an immortal body which will never experience death again. And the Christians are alive when this event takes place. Their bodies will be changed instantaneously from a mortal body subject to death to a body which will never die in the future whatsoever. And so that's the new truth that he was delivering to them as well. And he said, when this transition will take place for believers, for church saints, that here's some things that will be true about it. It'll take place in a moment. And the Greek word translated moment there has the root meaning of an atom, which cannot be divided. So it's going to happen so fast that you can't divide it, even a minute whatsoever. This change is going to take place. And that the ones who were resurrected from the dead at this point, they're going to be caught up from the earth to meet the Lord in the air. And the church saints who are alive, they're going to be changed radically in their body, and they're going to be caught up together with those who'd already died to meet the Lord in the air.
He uses this other phrase, in a twinkling of an eye. What does that mean?
It meant the amount of time a ray of light will kind of hit and bounce off the eye. Again, so fast.
It's quicker than drop just having your eye blink.
Right.
It's before your eye can blink, it hits your eye and bounces off.
That's right. And so all this is going to be a very rapid event that will take place instantaneously in the future. And Paul is saying that's the new revelation. Not every Christian's going to die, but every Christian is going to end up with an immortal body which will never die, either by resurrection or instant transform from one subject to death to a body which is not subject to death.
Jimmy, why is this so exciting? Why do people need to get excited about what we're talking about?
It's our blessed hope. I mean, here we are living with mortal bodies that can be diseased. I hate the word cancer. People hate that. They dread the time they may go to a medical doctor and have to receive that information from their doctor about that. And so we're going to be changed. That we're not going to have to go through that. In a moment, I love it in the twinkling of an eye. It's 1,000th the time it takes me to blink. I mean, we're going to be changed and taken into his presence immediately. This is the blessed hope for the entire world. And we need to understand that this is going to happen. With all the troubles, with all the tribulation we have in this world, realizing that in a moment we'll be changed and be with him. That is a very, very wonderful promise.
All right. Each week we're going to add to these verses. We're going to go one at a time, and we're going to join them all together and make a foundation for the rapture. And this is the first one. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to change hats. And I'm going to ask Jimmy, okay, when the rapture does take place across the world, and all living Christians at that time are gone, what's going to happen on the world? What happens after the rapture? All right, we'll talk about that. We come right back. Stick with us. All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. Ronald Showers and international journalist Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, who has been tracking and following what's happening in Israel since 1991, when he actually moved to Jerusalem 3 days before the Scuds started hitting it and lasted through 35 Scud attacks in Israel. And ever since, he's interviewed every prime minister of Israel and has lived there and is covering the events in the Middle East. And Jimmy, after this tremendous event, when Jesus comes and snatches Christians off of the earth, The world is in turmoil, and the Bible doesn't leave us hanging as to what's going to happen. It starts to talk about a time period called the 7-year tribulation period, where God starts to try and judge and bring judgment on the world at that time. And one of the ways we know that we're approaching that is God also talks about nations, what they're going to be doing in this time period after the rapture. And I want to approach this from the news and then tie it to Scripture. In the news, Iran could not be more prominent in the news. Everybody is afraid that this 6-month deal is going to fail, or it's just going to allow them to continue with their centrifuges, gaining enrichment of their uranium so that they can have this nuclear bomb. They say they're only 2 months away from getting it right now. And we all know what Israel is saying. Tell me why it's not just newsworthy around the world and people in the Middle East are afraid of Iran getting the bomb, but why does this have significance for people who read their Bible?
Well, when you read the Bible, you have to go back to the 38th chapter of the book of Ezekiel, which lays out what you were referring to as the nations gathering against the Jewish state, an alignment of nations, a coalition that will be formed after the rapture and during that 7-year period of time. And early on in that 7-year period, we're talking about, I believe, within the first 6 months. One of those nations that would be listed, Ezekiel chapter 38, verse 5, is referred to as Persia. Now, until 1936, the nation we want to focus on today, Iran, was called Persia. In fact, the Iranians still speak the Persian language. But when you go back to the book of Ezra, chapter 2, you see early on in history, there was a relationship between the Persians and the Jewish people. It was King Cyrus, prophesied 150 years before the fact by name, that was the one who allowed the Jews after the Babylonian captivity to return and build their temple and then establish their nation once again there in the Middle East. Now, he was a friendly Persian leader to the Jewish people. But when we come up date, I mean, we speed forward and look at what's happening today. We all think probably about 1979. When there were a group of Iranian young people who took over the American embassy, kept charge of it, controlled it for over 400 days. One of those young people, in fact, the leader of that group that overthrew the American embassy, was a man named Ahmadinejad. And if you'll remember, he has just completed his 8 years as the leader, the president of the Iranian people. And during that time, he continued with radical rhetoric to attack the Jewish state of Israel. He talked about them being wiped off the face of the earth. One of the Ayatollahs, Ayatollah Ali Khomeini, who is actually the head of the Supreme Council, the real power in the state of Iran, he said that we can wipe Israel off the face of the earth in about 90 seconds. And this radical rhetoric continued to perpetrate the world's news. All the people in the news gathering information responsibilities of the world would talk about what Ahmadinejad was saying. He denied the Holocaust. That never happened. And he was somewhat of a radical. But in the most recent election in Iran, they elected what many have referred to as a smiley-faced new president. His name, Hassan Rouhani. And he came forward to put out in the world a new image of the leadership of Iran. He was referred to as somewhat of a moderate. You've got to recall that the only reason he could run for president, he was one of 5 candidates selected by the Ayatollahs, the Supreme Council. So in other words, he, as a candidate, had to be in agreement with the leadership, the true leadership of Iran. Well, he was elected. He then started his campaign of trying to massage the leadership of the United States, the leadership of the European Union, the leadership of all the world leaders out there to help them understand that, hey, we're really moderate. What we're doing, our development of a nuclear program is not for military usage, but for domestic usage. I started to laugh when I heard that. I mean, why are they developing nuclear energy for domestic usage when they have the second largest oil supply in all of the world? And if indeed that's the case, they're only trying to develop this weapon of mass destruction for domestic use, what about all of those Shahab-3 missiles that can put a nuclear warhead on them and deliver that nuclear warhead to any target in the state of Israel? So that didn't seem to mix. You've got to also remember that prior to becoming president, Rouhani was the man who was in charge of the atomic energy program, or the nuclear program in Iran. By the way, they received all the technology and the technicians from Russia. And on a future program, we're going to talk about Russia. And there's a very interesting connection between Russia and Iran. But they got this technology, got the technicians, they started developing their nuclear program of a weapon of mass destruction, as you've mentioned. They've got 19,000 centrifuges. I mean, you're a hop, skip, and a jump from away from that nuclear warhead that can be mounted on that missile. And not only to deliver it to Israel, I've got to tell you, Saudi Arabia is very much concerned. In fact, Saudi Arabia, because of the Iranian threat, made contact with the Pakistanis. Pakistan is the only Islamic country in the world with nuclear power, with a weapon of mass destruction. And in fact, much of that was funded by Saudi Arabia. And so the leadership in Saudi Arabia said to the Pakistanis, hey, we've got one of two options. You can either give us a nuclear weapon to make certain that we can compete with Iran if they become nuclear powered, or we'll set up our technicians in Pakistan so you can fire a nuclear weapon into Iran if that need be the case. In fact, it has become so interesting in the Middle East. You've got to remember the phrase, politics makes strange bedfellows. And here the Saudi Arabians are now talking with the Israelis saying, wait a minute, here's how we operate our military bases, our Air Force bases in Saudi Arabia. This gives you an avenue going into Iran. Iran is just right across the Persian Gulf from Saudi Arabia. You're going to be allowed to use our airspace. It'll be a quicker way for you to get there into Iran and do a preemptive strike if you're going to have to do it. Well, all of this is the picture of the Middle East at this point in time when in Geneva, the P5 plus one, the P5, the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, that would be the United States, it would be Great Britain, it would be France, and then it would also include Russia and China. And then they say plus one, that would be Germany. So they go to Geneva. They talk about what they want to do as it relates to accommodating the Iranians, basically. And the end result was, well, the Iranians said, we'll cut back on our enrichment of uranium and thus slow down our development of a weapon of mass destruction. And then the powers that be there in Geneva said, okay, well, we'll pull back the sanctions. And then they said, well, we'll take a six-month trial period. My question is, how in the world are you going to get the Iranians to do anything? The sanctions that they've lifted have put the Iranians in a spot where they had to come to the table. Now, you release those sanctions, you give them back $10 billion worth of the monies they need from the banks that have had their assets frozen around the world. They're going to be allowed to now start selling oil at OPEC, and they want to move back in that number two position. They're second only to Saudi Arabia as it relates to, indeed, what is going to be the production of oil, and that is needed all across the world. They have the Persian Gulf right there where they can unload these petroleum products and send them to every nation of the world. So why are they going to now come back to the table? You've released the sanctions. And in fact, every single country that I talked about in the P5, they're rushing in there with their entrepreneurs, the people in their nations who want to develop a relationship with Iran.
All right. You cover Israel all the time. We only have about 2 minutes left. Tell me about how they're reacting to the deal that's on the table right now, that's in place, and how does this relate to biblical prophecy and the rapture?
Well, I've got to tell you that Prime Minister Netanyahu, and the last time I had a conversation with him, told me the number one threat to the Israeli people, to the Jewish people, is the Iranian nuclear weapon of mass destruction. Everything else pales in existence to that number one threat. And he tried to encourage the P5 plus one before the first Geneva meeting, and then before the second Geneva meeting. And then after the deal was established, he has continued on to voice his opinion about this not being the greatest and historic agreement that President Obama talked about. It's a historic mistake. And in fact, Obama called Netanyahu and said, shut up, quit talking about this, we're trying to get this deal together. Well, the Prime Minister of Israel said, look, we're not going to stand and allow this to happen. As our number one threat, we're going to have to deal with it. We'll do a preemptive strike. If we're the only ones that are going to have to be involved in this, we'll do it. The United States, you don't come in. Whoever is not going to join us is going to have to watch. We're going to shut it down. And what's significant about this is that as I began with the fact that Ezekiel 38:5 says Persia will be one and one of the main players in that coalition of nations that's going to come against the Jewish state of Israel. As Rennie so well told us about the rapture of the church, the rapture happens, that tribulation period begins, and in the first 6 months, because Ezekiel 38 verse 8 and verse 11 says it'll be a time of peace. When the Antichrist confirms that peace, this is the time these nations are going to attack.
All right, folks, we're just starting, and this is why we need to build week by week, so you need to stick with us. Next week, we're going to take part two of the rapture, and we're going to actually go to what Jesus taught in John 14 about his return there, and then Jimmy's going to continue with talking about the number one nation that Ezekiel points out is going to be the leader of the alliance of nations that come against Israel during the tribulation. Iran's just one of them. Who's the leader? We're going to reveal all that to you next week, so I hope that you'll join us.
For additional resources, log on to jashow.org. That's jashow.org.